www.bahai.us or call 1-800-22-UNITE. You are listening to community-sponsored Radio for Peace, KPFT Houston.
You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. Thank you.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Welcome to this January something edition of the show, or whatever it's called. Anyway.
Yes, we have the new improved enthusiastic model of the Flicted. That's awesome. Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee. Yeah? No?
What?
There he is. He didn't have you turned up.
Right.
Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Barry Dwight.
And he's
sitting in the rickety chair
for the ladies.
I didn't even know that Peter had connected on the Skype call.
Really? So what were you doing?
I was on the phone.
He was just magically there.
I was messing with this, and I was like, he wouldn't even be on. I hadn't accepted a call or anything.
So he's on a real phone?
He called in.
Awesome. So that hopefully will resolve those lag issues. Although last week's solution to the Skype was the best.
It truly was.
You know, when Pete actually made the trek to Houston. So yeah, I take it you made it home on your donut or semi-donut tire.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. So, and that's all resolved now.
Well, I would hope so. I would hope so.
But yeah, I got three more so that it all matches.
Primor donut tires?
Yeah, no, actually. Of course, it's always that way. When one tire goes like that, and you'd like to just try to fix the one and get down the road a little bit after Christmas and so on.
Yeah.
No, had to put a whole set on. It was pretty much every... the other front tire was ready to do the same thing, and...
Well, at least it didn't happen at speed on our wet highway in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, the rest of them all came off at Discount Tire instead of on the highway.
That's the best place to lose a tire, is at the tire store. Well, that's okay. That was like my $500 oil change a couple of weeks ago. So, you know, I went in to go get my oil, get my B1 service on the Honda. And, you know, it was going to be a couple of, you know, like 100 and something bucks just to do all the...
Oh, that never happens.
What's B1?
Just 100 bucks.
It's the when the service light comes on the car, it gives you these different codes that tell you what service the car needs. And B1 is, it's a tire rotation, it's the change of the oil, it's to check all your fluids and do some other stuff. I don't know.
Full wallet.
They it's the wallet gauge check.
It detects by every day it weighs you.
Credit rating. But my low tire light had been on for a while, but my tire didn't seem low. But I went by the tire store and had my tires filled up. You know, had to check the pressure, so it went off for a while, and it came back on. I was like, crud, this is practically a brand new car, and I've got a leak in one of my tires. So I asked them to check it, and sure enough, there was a very small leak. They showed me the little bubble thing, but it was in the sidewall.
Ouch.
And unfortunately, on the new car, they put the best tires they possibly can on there. You know, it's only by the high end, you know, the top end. It was the whatever top of the line Accord. And so the tire itself was $360
what?
To replace. But I wasn't going to mismatch my tires at that
right.
point.
They got you.
They got me. And then my tire warranty, which would have defrayed that cost by a couple hundred bucks, I didn't realize I had my car for a year now. So it was over a year.
Oh.
So, but if I had gone in when the light had come on, I probably would have saved a couple hundred bucks. So pay attention to your warning lights. Or not.
And your warranties.
Yeah, and your warranties. Well, you know, I mean, I had the worst luck with tires. Pete, you know, trying to trump me here with his story. But I do have bad luck with tires. I never get a leak where, you know, they can just patch it or something. But on the plus side, knock on wood, I haven't had a tire just go out on me on the highway.
That's good. I lost two on I-10 East.
At the same time?
At the same time. I hit a jack in the road.
Yeah, I was going to say you ran over some...
ran over a jack, yeah.
You're lucky you didn't have that
yeah,
that
could have been...
Well, there was that one story of that person who ran over the... There were some tourists here in a rent car from Germany, and they ran over a jack in the road, and it came up through the bottom of the car, through the seat, and killed the driver.
Yeah, so, I was lucky.
Yeah. So, he's got you beat with your two tires on
the... and of course, I got you beat with your one tire.
Yeah, you do. Wow. Your life sucks more than mine, but not as much as that guy's. So you win, I guess.
I guess.
All right. Well, we're glad you could tune in. Welcome to the show and all that. Visit us online at geekradio.com. You can also hang out with us on IRC, irc.cuckoo.com. The channel is Tech Bites. Pound Tech Bites.
Pound Tech Bites.
Yes, I know.
Hashtag.
Hashtag #TechBytes. We're on #TechBytes. Yeah.
On the non Twitter chat client.
Right. The pre Twitter thing. So you can also, if you don't have your own IRC client, you can go to geekradio.com and use the Java client that we published there.
And if you don't have your own dog, you can use Peter's in the background.
Well, Dwight's going to be competing for the role of. Dwight's going to be competing for the role of Pete's dog with his own barking tonight.
Yes. Yes. I could break into serious hacking.
Oh, it's a hacker off. Show.
Yes.
Oh,
different kind. Different
We're
kind.
So witty.
2600.
I wasn't here last week because he sounded like this.
He's not a black hat. Like he's a black lung.
A black lung.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not. I don't feel as bad as I sound, but it's. I've had this for over a week now, and it's getting kind of old.
What Christmas song should we have Dwight sing that we can use next year?
Star Spangled Banner. I'll hit those high notes. It's I begged off of This Week in Tech on Sunday too for the same reason.
What about
I would like to think that you begged off on This Week in Tech because you hadn't been on Technology Bites for a long time.
No, that's not why. It was just that I sounded like this, and I don't know if, dear listeners, if you're offended by this, sorry, but I missed the show too much. I had to come back.
Can you do silver and gold?
We're never going to give you up.
Yeah. Actually, I should probably do some Barry White song if I knew any.
Quick, go to the Google machine. All right, so what we're going to do is, the phone number, 713-526-5738, if you want to be on the air with us tonight. Try not to dominate Groovehouse's time on the phone. Well, I know some people like to call up and make demands of you and tell you
sometimes
stuff. And so
yeah.
Just encourage them to don't abuse Groovehouse tonight. Although, Groovehouse, you've got big news. I mean, little news.
What?
Yeah.
Although they're welcome to come into IRC
and do whatever they want
and yeah,
go nuts
and hound us.
Okay. No, you've got
what's my news?
Your news.
Your mini news.
Your shirt.
My shirt.
Yes,
oh,
Groovehouse.
Yeah.
There's less Groovehouse to go around.
There is less Groovehouse to go around.
That's a pretty good milestone.
For the first time in many, many years, I'm wearing...
You bought a new shirt.
I bought a new shirt. and that shirt size happens to be large.
Instead of?
XL.
Right.
Or 2XL.
Or 2XL. You know you're going to wash it a lot.
Hey, I had started to get into 2XLs, and I was like, dang.
This is a 2XL. I'm afraid. Yeah. Well, good for you,
yeah,
man. So he's, there's less Groovehouse to go around,
right.
But it's quality, not quantity.
Well, and after the holidays, I'm sure with all of us on the show that the total weight of the program has remained the same.
Huh. I wonder why yes, after the holidays. All right, so what we're going to do now is we're going to go out to San Antonio via... Not even the... How does this... It was just the phone.
Just voice over IP.
Over the pots
on my end.
Pots on ours and VoIP on yours. All right, so we're going to do the info shot. So, info shot.
It's the Technology Bites info shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Okay, well, we've got this time now CES is actually going, so there are not tons of things to talk about, I'll say that, but there are at least things to talk about. First off, I guess, is, there's a few news stories, and then we'll hit the CES-tacular kind of thing. This one actually comes from at CES, but it's not particularly a CES thing. Have you noticed, when you're in a public Wi-Fi place, how dog slow the public Wi-Fi is? Like in airports or coffee shops or any of that stuff because of the limits of the Wi-Fi spectrum. FCC Chairman Julius Genachowski says it's a problem and he wants to clean up the mess. Speaking with Gary Shapiro at CES, Genachowski revealed that he's been working with the Department of Defense and other government agencies to open up more bandwidth for Wi-Fi. Areas like New York City have an abundance of spectrum set aside for TV licenses, he says, airwaves that could serve the public better for Wi-Fi or cellular networks. Quote, the rest of the world's watching us, he told Shapiro. We have to get it right. We need to have a nationwide, unlicensed, continuous, same-frequency platform for innovation. To do that, of course, the FCC has to get spectrum from broadcasters and redistribute it. He says, quote, we can reorganize it and ensure everybody gets a good share. He says that this is an uphill battle, but recognizes it's important. He sees the Wi-Fi traffic jam and says, quote, we need to fix it. Wi-Fi is such an integral part of our broadband ecosystem, and we need to make sure that we pay it sufficient attention. So that seems to be, in contrast to the earlier years of this show when whoever was in charge of the FCC didn't know what an internet was, this seems to be progress in the right direction, paying attention for more bandwidth for wireless devices. especially with the rise of tablets. And then this one came to my attention via Dwight, because his voice isn't so rough and raspy in the tech blog. Talking about a company that's in New York and is coming to Houston and 21 other U.S. markets. They announced this at CES as well. What they do is they take traditional broadcast television, and you pay a monthly fee, and they make that broadcast television available to you via the internet. So to get to other devices like tablets and such. One of the things that's a problem, though, is that obviously the broadcasters don't like that this company is getting paid to send TV signals to you over the internet, and they aren't getting a cut. So they're getting sued, and it will be interesting to see what happens with that. The way that they do this, and this is why it'll be interesting to see what the courts say, is they provide each subscriber with his or her own dime-sized antenna clustered by the thousands in arrays, which then pull in the local signals for each market. So the reality is you're paying them for that hardware and service. You know, in other words, you're sort of, it's like, you know, in a sense, like, think about it. You pay the cable company, and they get the local broadcast signal and send it to you. But I believe that, I think that there may be some money goes to the broadcasters from that, so they may have to work that out. But the, you know, their model, you can see where legally, is that any different than if you record a TV show, if you recorded live television and then stream that to your, or are watching it over your, say, you know, if you use one of the various boxes that'll let you stream that stuff, if you stream it to your phone or elsewhere. So there's another company that I had seen a story a few weeks ago that has a similar model, that's, except their model isn't broadcast stations, their model is cable. And so what they do is basically sign up, they have a cable account for you that you would sign up to, and then all of your cable stuff, so there's essentially the cable box is at their location, just like the little mini antennas for, the company is called, I guess it's Aereo, A-E-R-E-O. There's this other company, and I can't remember their name, I'll have to research it, but their thing is to do the same thing with cable boxes. And so then that would mean that you could feasibly subscribe to cable for a different city than Houston if you wanted, for example. And the idea is they're just offering a service. You know, the sign-up, there's the whole, they're paying the cable company for that account on your behalf, I guess, and then streaming it to whatever devices you want. And so it's going to be very interesting to see where that goes. Although if you're using that over your, you know, using that over your LTE to your tablet or your phone, you're going to burn through your, I would bet you burn through your stuff pretty fast. But clearly things are getting, it's getting a lot faster that this kind of innovation is coming around, and people are getting used to having this stuff available, or they want it available in more places, and they want to have all of their information that they consume available on whatever screen they choose to consume it. And so, hence the rise of companies like this. So we'll be keeping an eye definitely on that one and seeing what happens. Another interesting sort of TV one, this one made the biggest ripple that I've seen, is from NVIDIA. They've made their entry into the gaming console market with a product called Shield. It's based on Android and looks like a smartphone glued to an Xbox controller. Not only will it play Android games, it'll stream PC games and features an HDMI out for TV display, which makes it a home console. In addition to Shield, the upstart Ouya, O-U-Y-A project, is humming along with game creators and hobbyists already tinkering with development kits. It's an Android-based game machine that was funded on Kickstarter and is also slated to drop early this year. Additionally, Valve's rumored Steam-based console is no longer just a rumor. Last month, their CEO told Kotaku it will sell hardware starting in 2013, and PC Gamer added a report that a Valve engineer recently corroborated this news and said that Valve's living room machine would run off of Linux. So there's all these new gaming products coming, and the interesting part is when they run on a more open platform, what's going to happen to the console gaming world when they run, when the games are running on an open platform like Android, or a more open platform, a widely available platform, as opposed to the, say, closed world of the PS3 or Xbox and some of that. So the eroding effect of these different trends on existing players is, like I said in the previous story, getting faster, and is going to be interesting to watch. Now on to, I guess, the news. This is all new stuff. It's not necessarily all from CES, but the vast majority of it is. Samsung today, they showed off a new flexible display technology called Yum, Y-O-U-M. During their keynote address in CES, at CES in Vegas, company executives talked it up. It's designed to bring out better colors and contrast with a super thin form factor. It uses OLED display technology, which longtime watchers or listeners to the show will know what that is. You know, I've heard it talking about it. The senior VP of Samsung's display lab held up a prototype of a phone that has one of these displays that's bent around the side of the phone so you can see updates on the side. The technology will let the company's partners make bendable, rollable, and foldable displays, he said. So at least they're, you know, they've been showing these, Samsung's been showing these off for a while. There was a display prototype last year at CES. Samsung slapped the Yum brand name on the technology last spring, but let's see, they showed a concept video that showed just how flexible it could be. The video started out with three actors in a coffee shop, one of whom folds up his high-tech wallet phone thing. Imagine a table that folds, a tablet, sorry, that folds like a bifold wallet. Another one breaks out a tablet that rolls out from something the size of a handheld voice recorder. Then Microsoft's chief technical strategy officer came on stage to demonstrate a prototype of how a Windows phone would look using a Yum display. So we're getting that there's some interesting devices, you know, just talking about sort of the hardware form factor. There's some interesting devices coming along on that. On displays, there's also, and I guess it's also Samsung stuff. When you thought the smartphone couldn't get any bigger, supposedly they are working on a 6.3-inch display for the eventual Galaxy Note 3, according to the Korea Times. This isn't a CSS one. Samsung has pioneered the category that we laughingly refer to as the phablet segment, or somewhere between a smartphone and a tablet. Apparently, because of decent sales of the first big-bodied Galaxy Note and the success of the Galaxy Note 2, they're pushing it. They say it was success. It's been successful around the world, and so it looks like they're going to go bigger. So then eventually we'll have that fight between the 10-inch. The 10-inch Galaxy Note 5, that's what I'm looking for, the iPad-sized smartphone. Then what will you call it, a tablet smartphone? Anyways, in other stuff, speaking of tablets, Dell has released a tablet that is about $500. It's a new Windows 8 tablet, so that's the thing that's different. This isn't a iPad or Android type device. This is a Windows 8 tablet for starting at $500. It's the Dell Latitude 10. It's not an entirely new tablet, just a new, more economical configuration of the Dell Latitude 10. It's got an Atom processor, 2 gigs of RAM, and a 10-inch IPS Corning Gorilla Glass display. It does have, it's lacking some features compared to its more robust sibling. It doesn't have a swappable battery, and the rear camera doesn't have an LED flash. It also doesn't have mini USB and mini HDMI ports. It can use a passive stylus, but it won't support the Wacom active stylus. The idea is, though, this puts this Windows 8 device as a competitively priced item to the iPad and Microsoft's Surface RT, which is their sort of tablet-y, more pad-type, tablet operating system, where this is the full 32-bit Windows 8 Pro. So it means that the Dell Latitude 10 can join a Microsoft Windows network domain. It can be managed with Active Directory and group policy. It can install and run all of the Windows software businesses are already using on their Windows PCs. So it'll be interesting to see if a cheap Windows 8 device for $500 is a winner for, as a tablet to bring the tablet into some of the corporations, or will some of these other, is it not powerful enough, or is it going to get beat by the more purpose-built, iPads and Android tablets that are out there? But it's an interesting, now the dilemma, certainly for some people, the dilemma gets a lot wider because now you have a third operating system to choose from on your tablets. And this one was a big story, I don't even remember how long ago, but now it has... They've overcome production delays, and the Pebble smartwatch is actually in production. There's apparently now shipping, and so people are starting to receive them, and so you're starting to see some hands-on. It says the factory in China is manufacturing 15,000 of the smartwatches per week. If there are no further delays, it will take the company 5.5 weeks to produce enough watches to fulfill the 85,000 Kickstarter-based pre-orders. Let's see, the CEO of for Pebble claimed that there were tens of thousands of retail pre-orders for the smartwatch, and that, quote, our goal is to just keep pumping out Pebbles. In case you don't remember what this smartwatch is, it has a 144-pixel by 168-pixel e-paper display. It's like e-ink, but I think there's a brand name thing with that. And it connects to Android or iOS devices over Bluetooth, allowing apps like personal training software Runkeeper to push notifications to the watch face. So, basically you put an app on your smartphone, if it's Android or Apple, and it will communicate with the watch and, if you receive a text or a phone call, it can display that information on your watch. So, another one where, this has been around, it's been out for a while. I mean, the Kickstarter thing ended a while back. So it's interesting to see what's happening with that and the kind of, personal network that this ends up being a part of. May be valuable to a lot of people. I guess we'll see as it goes on. It's another small screen to add into the mix. And finally, your flash drive, that thumb drive, it just doesn't hold enough, huh? You started with the tiny, megabyte, ones that were measured in megabytes, and then, you moved up, and maybe now you've got a 16 or 32 gig thumb drive. Well, screw that. Now there's the Data Traveler HyperX Predator has hit the terabyte mark for a thumb drive, 1 terabyte. It's a USB 3 flash drive. They had one that had 512 gigabytes of storage, but now the new one is coming out with a full terabyte, making it the largest USB thumb drive on the market as far as data storage. I mean, it's the same size as the usual ones. It's not like bigger. It's not like five times bigger, this big, huge box. Kingston is also touting the drive as fast. With super speed USB 3.0 support, the HyperX Predator offers transfer speeds up to 240 megabytes per second when reading data and up to 160 megs per second when writing data. It's made to be durable. Apparently, you know, it's got a metal casing, and so it has a 5-year warranty. It's compatible with all the Windows, you know, let's see, with Windows, all the Windows that you care to put it on, including Windows XP with Service Pack 3, Mac OS 10, 10.6 or higher, and Linux 2.6 or higher. So the thing about it is, so that's cool. That's got all that great stuff, right? Yeah, well, then there's the question, the important part, which is how much do you think that would be, you know, because obviously you could put a lot of stuff on it. They haven't revealed the price yet, but just to give you some reference, the 512 gig edition, half the size, you know, half the storage of it, retails for about $1,800. So sadly, that 1 terabyte to carry, I don't know, for that kind of money, you could probably like buy an external that would be 1 terabyte. You could, or a selection of flash drives and put them in a case with a battery or something, and or USB power it for cheaper. But just in case you want to have the biggest storage thumb drive around, that's coming out this quarter. And that's the news.
All right. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us tonight. We are taking your calls. We're going to be here until 10 o'clock. And only good things can happen, especially if we get Dwight talking. Or singing.
Singing would be good, too.
Would it, Groovehouse? Are you longing to hear him croon?
I wouldn't say I was longing, but I mean, it sure would be a novelty.
Well,
we don't get Dwight, you know, this deep of a voice very often.
You know, you could possibly replace Beyonce at the inauguration if you audition well tonight.
I'm on it.
All right. Well, looks like we have one call in the queue, which is awesome.
That call is Pete.
Oh, is it?
Okay. No,
I got the thing blocking the where it has the name.
Oh, right. Can't
okay.
see.
Yeah, I can't see. Okay, so we have no calls in the queue.
That's right. So the phone lines are open.
All phone lines are open. Groovehouse is longing to hear you croon, so 713-526.
I'm not longing. I'm just...
No longing.
No longing.
Well, I think you're pining.
Mm-hmm.
Not piney.
Just kind of hoping for a song.
Were you? A
couple verses. One verse. Something.
I think Dwight's pulling up his auto-tune app now.
Oh, yeah. I can always use auto-tune. Can't I? There's always that.
Have you seen the... Have you heard... Well, it's a YouTube video, but there's no actual video in it. But it's... Somebody has taken the Price is Right theme song and slowed it down 800 times.
Wow.
And it becomes this ambient... trance-like piece.
That's how they do most of those. They're old 60s television themes. That's what most of those are.
It's actually kind of soothing and
it's chopped and screwed.
It's what?
Chopped and screwed.
Dwight's on the lean.
He's Trill.
He's Trill. Yep, that's it right there.
Don't get me going.
It only hurts when he laughs.
I'll go from Trill into my 90-year-old old man hack.
All right. Wow. So do the phones even work, or did Pete call in and break it all?
No, they're working.
It's okay. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with Technology Bites. We will be happy to take your calls, your questions, your concerns.
Regarding
computers, technology, the internet, smartphones, black lung disease. 713-526-5738.
I don't know if people were listening on the news, but the one that's interesting and that was a Houston story is that company that is talking about offering by subscription streaming broadcast television to whatever device you want. This Aereo company is where you would pay like $8 a month, and they would stream. They would have these little antennas, and you know each person has their own, and you get you can tune in any of the broadcast channels from Houston.
The thing that most intrigues me about the pricing is they have a $1 a day for a day pass. So if there's like something you want to watch that day, but you don't necessarily want to have a subscription, you can use this. The company already has started its marketing efforts. They have an Aereo Hue Twitter account that they launched today, and they started following me after I did that story.
Call me when they start doing cable, because I mean, I get local channels.
Well, cable's
what I want is a la carte cable.
Well, there's another company that is doing the same kind of model. I mentioned that in the news. That's doing the same kind of model with cable, and the thing with theirs is they do where they have a cable box for each account, and obviously you pay a lot more, but you could feasibly get a cable. If you like the lineup of channels for a different city, you could get your cable from there and have it streamed.
Well, conceivably, Xfinity app for your iPhone, iPad, or web streaming, you can do Comcast,
but you already have to have cable through them.
Right.
See, I have no cable. I have over the air.
But if you have cable through them and you don't use it, you just consider that would be the same as paying the fee. Why wouldn't it be cheaper to stream a la carte? Why wouldn't you just...
I just think it would be neat to be able to make your own package of, certain channels, and then that's all you pay for.
Well, that's kind of the dream that the cable industry is denying people,
right,
is the idea that you don't have to have their bundles, that you essentially get only the shows you want,
on the devices you want them on.
Right.
The thing I could see, the day pass thing for broadcast stuff could be very good if you were at a, say, a football or baseball game here in town, and if it was, say, being broadcast as well, then you'd be able to get the... see what you can see in the stadium, but also have access to the broadcast stuff.
Well, one of the issues with this is that, they're expanding. Houston's one of 22 cities that they're expanding into. And they've already been challenged in New York. And so far, they have won the legal challenges there. But what's going to happen is they're going to go into each city, and they're going to face lawsuits for each individual city from each television station. And so this could really throw a wrench in what they're doing, unless, there's some kind of class action consolidation of the suits. But they face a tough row with this kind of expansion.
The part I wonder about, though, is, you're talking about the broadcasters. They put that signal out there. Supposedly, you're basically paying them for an antenna and then the thing that streams it to you, which the broadcasters shouldn't care. Is that any different than if you set up an antenna and a one of these DVRs, the kind of TV, the TiVo that'll stream over the internet?
Slingbox, yeah. Well, but you're setting that up personally, and this is a party that's taking money.
We'll make money doing it.
Make money per month. Essentially, what their argument is, they're renting you the infrastructure, the antenna, and the infrastructure. They're not actually, doing anything different with the content that you wouldn't normally do if you just had your antenna at home, but they're making it available to you. What it may do, and I think what people hope it does, is it accelerates the idea of the local broadcast stations doing this on their own, so that you essentially can watch Channel 11 and Channel 2 and PBS Channel 8 on your iPad without having to go through this a third party like this. I think that's the hope of most people who like to see the cord cutting movement prosper.
You'll never find.
he's gonna croon for you. All right, there's a phone call coming in. That's encouraging. 713-526-5738. Yeah, we were talking, I just signed up for Hulu, and I'm not sure. Just not sure. I DVR everything as it is, but I just don't know if I can wait 24 to 48 hours for the show to come on.
Do you try to watch things in real time as they're on the air?
No.
Well, then what difference does it make?
You don't get to talk about it the next morning with coworkers. That's the big difference of things, that water cooler lag.
I want it as soon as I've got time to watch it, not as soon as it's available. So I record it in real time. I get all my stories are set to
my
record.
Stories.
Are set up to record. But then I sit down and I watch. So maybe I want to have a Fringe festival and watch five cop, you know, in a row. I maybe I don't watch it right. for 2 weeks, but I save it up
right.
so I can watch a couple of, you know, sit down, pop some corn, open some wine, watch my thing. But if I don't really know, my schedule's too out of whack if I don't know when it's coming.
Right.
And Hulu doesn't have everything. So, I don't know. I would really like to have...
Even if you're paying, you're not...
Yeah, you get... Even some of the broadcast stuff, they'll kick you over to
it's spotty. I think they've got to, like, negotiate with each show, it seems like, and, you know, their contracts within contracts. And even sometimes, you know, with mid-season, they'll change their policy on it. Suddenly, it won't be available on mobile devices or it won't be available.
Well, there's, like, a show that I wanted to watch that I didn't watch while it was in real time because I could only record two shows at once, so I had to pick, and there was three shows on this one time slot, so I had to pick one that I would just watch when it came into reruns, you know, for the fall season or the off-season. But because it was in the off season and the new season hadn't started up yet, it was on Hulu. So I was able to watch it then, so that was kind of nice. But it's not always there.
Then well, they forced commercials too.
Right.
Yeah.
CBS, I mean, Hulu was originally Fox, ABC, and NBC. Comcast, when Comcast bought NBC, they pulled out of Hulu. So it's just kind of Fox and ABC at the moment. ABC, of course, is also Disney. And so the CEO and the CTO just announced that they're leaving. So I'm not sure that Hulu, as you know it now, will be what it is, say, a year from now.
Yeah, so they let you sign up for it for a week for free, but you have to remember to go on there and cancel it. But yeah, so I would like to be, like we were talking, I'd like to be able to roll my own. Just, you know, here's my package. This is what I want to see. These are the shows that I care about. So even if you could do, like, almost like an iTunes thing where you could just buy, you know, a pass for a show. I don't even care about the whole station, the whole broadcast network. I mean, maybe there's only one afternoon special on the Oxygen Network that I want to see ever. I should be able to, like, do that. So the whole idea of that company offering like the day pass, you should be able to fine tune it like that, but I don't see it happening. 713-526-5738 is the number to call. I see that we have a call in the queue. I see Groovehouse Inflicted are just chumming it up in there.
The only way I could see that you could make what you want to happen, Jay, anytime soon would be have a group of people go in on cable and sling boxes at somebody's house and just put it in a closet and and set up all the sling boxes, and then you just divide up the cost of the cable for those programs, you know, for each person, and it would cut it pretty substantially if you had four or five people who did it, but not that I'm suggesting that for anybody who works for one of these cable companies out there.
They have that. It's called Pirate Bay.
Yeah, you can probably get your shows pretty quick on... There's various networks with the right software where you can get those programs when you want them, Jay, even before they've been broadcast.
Yeah, if you get them, you know, when they get uploaded on the coast before they get Central Time, they might get it uploaded before it actually broadcasts here in the CST. But, you know, don't want to break the law. Just want to see my stories.
My stories.
713-526-5738. Groovehouse?
Jay likes the novellas.
Telenovelas.
Telenovelas.
Yes. El Clon. Man, those are some really, really messed up entertainment. You don't even have to speak the language.
I mean, no, I'll screw it.
Every woman has a knife under her dress. It just goes without saying. You're going to get stabbed. All right, Groovehouse, who's up?
All right, up first on the show, we are going to speak with Sandy.
Sandy, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Well, I don't even know how to pronounce the question that I have, but I can spell it out for you.
Okay.
I'm trying to see if this would be an advantage to replace the device's software. It's CYANOGENMOD.
Cyanogen mod.
Yeah, yes. What is that? What is that about? I just jotted it down a couple of days ago, and now I'm just surfing here, just curious. No,
all right,
nothing.
Well, all of your smartphones, just like computers, come with an operating system.
Mm-hmm.
It's and then the, in the form on the phone, it's a ROM because there's not really a hard drive. It's it the operating system is written to the chipset. So the various hackers and tinkerers have taken that. What you do is you offload the ROM off the phone and you make modifications to it. Maybe you you add some functionality to it. You break certain restrictions that the software might have or the firmware might have, and then you can load that back onto the phone. So you get these mods that basically allow you to, first of all, jailbreak the phone so that you can have root access and make modifications to it, and then you can put on your own operating system. How did you come across this information?
I can't even remember.
Is there a problem with what you have now?
No, not at all. In fact, it was just a curious question. I was just wondering about it.
It could be a lot of fun to play with. My Android phone.
It was actually for a tablet for a little bit, not really for the phone.
Yeah, it can be very frustrating if you don't know what you're doing. You can easily, what they call, brick your phone. Basically, the phone just doesn't work, and you have to really kind of either get online and do your research to figure out how to what tools you're going to need to restore your phone back to the way, you know, back to factory specs or back to some kind of functionality. I consider myself relatively good at tinkering with this kind of stuff, but when I first got into modding phones or using phone mods, I did have some real problems. I mean, it just took some diligence to get out of the hole that I dug myself in, and then that in and of itself was entertaining, but it's not for the faint of heart.
Yeah, there is a big disclaimer here on this before you do it. Okay, well,
and if you get the wrong one, if you're not careful, if you don't actually get the firmware or if you don't get what you need for the particular device that you're using, then that can be a problem too. So when I was researching it online to do my phone, I had to make sure that I was getting the right mod for the right device because there were two different versions. There was the phone that I had, and there was the version that they released in the UK, which was slightly different. What's going on?
We have Peter. We lost Peter. We now have Peter.
Okay.
And we might have lost our caller that was asking about signage and mod.
Ah. So in the efforts to restore Peter, you hung up on the other person.
Things happen very quickly here at Technology Bites, yes.
Well, fortunately, we responded to the situation by panicking and then not doing what we
did. There was a waving of hands and a pointing over there, and yeah, I just hung
up
to the button.
All right, so anyway, for our caller that we hung up on, we apologize. We spent so much time in the first part of the show getting that caller, and then we just dumped him. But the one about the CyGen mod, you know, if you want to play with it, it can be fun. But if you need a good functioning phone the whole time, you want to be careful because even the mods, they're not 100%. They're written by people that, you know, are having a good time doing it, but they can have their own built-in problems too.
If that's something you want to mess around with, it's better to have like an old device to mess around with it to kind of, you know, brick your first device or break your first device, you know, where it's not like you're operating on your daily driver. This can be, you know, kind of the equivalent of having a garaged car, kind of a project car.
If the next call, when we get it in, I don't know if Flicted wants to try experimenting with Google, with using Google's chat thing with audio.
We might have to.
If I fall off on the next one, I figure that would be the time to try connecting.
Well, you know, when you bring Pete on, you have to double tap.
I did the double tap, but I didn't do is I don't think I put her on hold. Pete was double tapped before, and then I just thought I could just go over to there because I thought maybe since Groovehouse had her. But when I hit the double tap on one, we lost her, even though I didn't know I was capable of that because I didn't press the button in here to pick her up.
All right. Well, do you want to experiment with the Google Voice thing with Pete and while we take this other call, or yes, no, maybe?
He's shaking his head yes.
He's shaking his head yes instead of nodding no.
He's nodding no, yeah.
All right. Well, why don't we take this next call, and then we'll hang up on Pete and let him, or Pete can hang up.
Well, we'll see if it hangs me up.
Okay.
All right,
so up next on the show, we're going to speak with Eric.
Eric, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi, guys. Love talking to you. I had a question about, is there a way to get iTunes and or like an equivalent app on an Android phone?
Well, the equivalent app is going to be Google Music. I don't know if you can run iTunes
Google
on
Play or Google
Play. I guess they're both. The two kind of tie into each other on Jelly Bean.
I'm just kidding. The stuff that I'm trying to download off of iTunes is like lectures, college lectures, and stuff like that. iTunes has a section called iTunes U.
Right.
And I was trying to see if there's anything like that for Android, or is there a way to get iTunes on Android phones?
You can't get iTunes on Android phones, and that's a special area on iTunes. However, a lot of those are also available at the individual universities' websites. Apple aggregates them, kind of puts them all in one place, but what you might do, if you can find them at the iTunes site, online or on another machine, and then go to the specific university for the lecture you want and get it from there. That's a little harder to do, but that probably is the best way to do it.
Okay, so it's just not plausible to have a iTunes on Android.
No, unless there's an app that tries to aggregate that type of thing in a similar fashion, but I'm not familiar with it.
All right. Well, appreciate your help. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for your call. Yeah. So that seems to be the great divide still. Is you can't use iTunes to update any other portable device other than iDevices. But once you have the file, if you download the lecture from iTunes, is it not an MP3?
It's going to be AAC.
You could always export it, though. You could burn it to a CD and then import it back in. But you've got to jump through some hoops.
I don't think you have to do that necessarily.
No, there are applications that will let you do the conversion.
So, yeah.
But it should be playable. I mean, I think that AAC actually is a standard, and Apple happens to use it. It's actually the M4P file. I think you may just be able to change the extension M4P, and then it'd be playable.
They've taken off all the DRM?
There's no DRM on those. The only thing that's DRM'd is the iBooks. And,
it's DRM'd all the heck.
It's DRM'd all the heck, right.
All right, 713-526-5738 as we creep up to the top of the first hour of this program. We've still got time to take some calls if you want to be on the air. 713-526-KPFT is the number to call. All of our lines are open except for the one that Pete's on, but he's likely to drop off at any time because of the way things go around here. So feel free to call in and take up some of these lines. 713-526-KPFT to be on the air with Technology Bites. So, yay, hooray. We're losing the show that comes on after us. If you listen to us locally here in Houston, it's my understanding that tonight is the last night that Vegan World Radio will be on Wednesday nights. They're moving to Tuesday nights.
Tuesday, yeah.
So we'll be chased out right away. We'll have to do the wire ready thing, but we'll have a new show coming on after. So I'm not really sure what it was. I'm sure I was told, but I forgot.
Doctor, somebody's doing something.
It's something Dr. Mayobi's Excellent Adventure.
Fun Time Clinic. 713-526-5. So what is the deal with the callers tonight? It's just...
Is there something on TV or something?
Oh, well, although it's not necessarily our audience, it's the People's Choice Awards is tonight.
Oh.
I don't think that's necessarily...
I think a lot of kids went back to school this week, so a lot of people maybe, I don't know, they're kind of getting back into the normal swing of things.
Maybe that's it. Maybe, higher education or education at all is calling them away.
How was the Geek Gathering?
Geek Gathering was good. Geek Gathering was very good. In fact, we ran up against an art opening, which meant that if you went and looked at the art, you could eat the snacks. So there was cheese and cookies.
And lots of Cheetos. And big mounds of
cheese puffs, even. So, yeah. So the Geek Gathering was good. It was a little cold, but... it actually worked out pretty well. As we made our way in, the art people made their way out, and we were able to move around inside of Cones pretty readily, and everything was made better by the fact that they do have a beer and wine license there. So Dwight came in, talked in a low voice.
Pretty much like this.
I think we need to commission, I should talk to Cone about... reserving that back table during the winter months on the inside, because that actually kind of worked out. There was enough room to get a good number of people seated there, so perhaps we'll do that.
He needs to invest in some of those cool, tall triangles.
He has one.
So he does?
He has one, and it was out front, but a bunch of drunk yahoos were
hogging it,
so we had that going for
as
us.
As opposed to us drunk yahoos.
As opposed to the sober yahoos looking to get drunk in the warmth. All right, 713-526-5738. We got some calls coming in. All right.
All right, so up next, we are going to speak with Eric.
Eric, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Sorry, guys, I know I just called in asking about the Android phone issue, but I had another question as to whether or not you guys ever think that computers or artificial intelligence will ever become self-aware. I know it's not really on the technical side, kind of theoretical, but I'd really like to have you guys' views on that.
Well, I assume that yes, it will eventually, you know, become self-aware, and that it will take over the planet and human life as we
see. I guess I think that you get into a question of kind of definitions on it. You know,
I always assume that
you start getting into the real question, and I don't know that it's really been well answered. You know, what is consciousness? What is what level does that take? I mean, a dog is self-aware.
True.
That doesn't have to be all that intelligent, I mean, to do that. I'm guessing your goldfish is self-aware. But
my standard was as to whether or not eventually computers would be smart enough to fool us. I'm sure of that.
Well, I would go so far as to say that computers already are smart enough to fool a lot of people.
my dad included. Yeah, I guess.
So's a web page that says you've been logged out of the internet. Put in your social security number and email address.
Well, listen, we're gonna have to take a short break here, but we'll continue this conversation after we get back from our top of the hour break. And you're listening to Technology Bites. Am I too soon, or is it one minute or less than a minute? My clock was off before, so now it's exactly one minute now. All right, so we've got the clock synchronized. All right, so I don't know, self-aware. I mean, people can't figure out Facebook already.
Well, I think that the stage is that I think it could happen, but I think that first it's going to be, there's going to be other layers of non-self-aware computers driving cars for us. I mean, autopilot on a plane. There's going to be a lot more of that kind of stuff, much more widespread, I think, before there's going to be enough horsepower
right.
in a computer before it would have that kind of awareness.
All right. Well, we will have this conversation pretty when we get back. We got to take a short break here at the top of the hour. You're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groovehouse.
KPFT's upcoming Winter Fun Drive needs phone volunteers to staff our busy pledge center. And we're putting the call out to you to lend a hand. Your help makes a difference, and you get an opportunity to meet listeners just like you. Organizations are also welcome to participate. We'll thank you by your group's name on the air for helping KPFT. Email membership@kpft.org to get notified of phone trainings or to get your organization involved. Thanks for helping out during our Winter Fun Drive. Visit KPFT.org to pre-pledge. And follow us at Facebook.com, KPFT Houston.
Houston, you remember remember Muddy Waters the dog, former canine co-host of the Morning Mix here on KPFT, right? Well, it's his 16th birthday, and he's inviting you to come out and celebrate with him Sunday, January 20th at his home away from home, Anderson Fair. And Phil's going to co-MC with me, right, Phil?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Some of his favorite musicians will be graciously putting on the show. Orange is in. Matt the Electrician will be there. Shane Walker. And Mojo Fromopoulos, you know, for Muddy's Blues Itch.
Proceeds benefit two of Muddy's favorite causes, KPFT Radio and Forgotten Dogs of the Fifth Ward Project. If you'd like to enter the raffle, plan on bringing a cat or dog food donation.
That's Sunday, January 20th, 2 to 6 p.m. at the legendary Anderson Fair. Advance tickets are recommended. Go to yourtexasmusic.com.
See you there. Oh, he's as gentle as a bird. You're listening to KPFT Houston.
Hey, Barrett, what's happening?
I don't know.
Well, room around town.
We interrupt this skit to bring you...
Barrett time! Barrett time! Barrett time!
Yeah. That means it's time for...
Barrett time!
Yeah. Anyway. Take it away, Barrett.
All right. We're two shows into the new year, and things are slowly starting to ramp back up in Userland. Whether you fancy yourself a Pearl Monk or just a Pearl Monkey, you may want to stop by the Houston Pearl Meetup tomorrow night, where Jay Vaught will be demonstrating a Pearl defect management / tracking web app that he wrote for his day job some 5 years ago. The group boasts a roster of 64. Kudos on keeping the membership restricted to powers of two. The group will be meeting tomorrow night at the 3100 block of Alabama. If you're interested in attending, you can find the specifics on meetup.com. The group is actually associated with the Houston Pearl Mongers. They welcome anyone with an interest in Pearl. No experience with the language is required. The group can help answer questions or help mentor new programmers through problems. And developed in 1987 by Larry Wall, by 1998, Pearl was called the duct tape that holds the internet together. That was as much of a dig as it was a compliment, as it was often seen by some language purists as inelegant. But some 25 years later, people still turn to Pearl for both work and personal projects. Speaking of stuff that holds stuff together, the Houston Mini Maker Fair will be featuring 3D printing methods that take text, essentially, and then turns the data into real-world physical objects of function art, or arguably both. This is definitely an empowering thing, as the users of this technology are converted from consumers to designers. Several exhibits featuring 3D printing will be present, including BusyBot, Action Figure Labs, Techno Chaos, Craftworks, and Progware. And if the thought of environmentally friendly, efficient electric vehicles doesn't make you want to leave the house on a Saturday morning, what about an electric drag racer geared for speed? Two Houston area makers, one who happened to be the president of the National Electric Drag Racing Association, the other headed the Houston Electric Auto Association, got together and started Lone Star EV Racing to custom build and race electric vehicle drag cars and EV race cars. They'll be debuting a new creation that boasts somewhere in the neighborhood of 800 horses and can go from 0 to 150 in 8 seconds. To put this in perspective, a Bugatti Veyron takes 11.67 seconds, and a much cheaper Lamborghini Diablo SC5.7 takes 18.46 seconds to go from a dead stop to 150 miles per hour. So imagine blowing by one of those in your own converted Miata. The Houston Mini Maker Fair is taking place next Saturday, January 19th, at the Stafford Center. Event viewing hours run from 10 a.m. until 6 that evening. The event is family-friendly and open to makers of all ages. Hit www.makerfairhouston.com for details and directions. That's F-A-I-R-E and Maker Fair. That's it for your mini monks, mongers, and mini makers, and that's that for Barrett time.
All right. Welcome back to the show. And we got calls in the queue, or a call in the queue. Please smile about Afflicted. I always look so amused, and I don't always know why.
It was nice. The music was still playing, and I potted it up and down right, so it went... It went doon 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 doon. I was proud of myself.
Insane.
I'm glad that Afflicted has found ways to amuse himself kind of outside the sphere of the show.
He was really sad at the beginning of the show, and now he's all happy. I think, you know.
Well, being here, being a part of this program and tonight's broadcast didn't fill him with joy, but manipulating that little bit of Barrett time music.
that.
Somehow kind of like being a gremlin and just getting in there and messing with stuff. That cheered him up.
It's pretty enjoyable.
He's a prankster.
Plus, he's probably on a sugar high.
Why would you say that?
He had a nice big chocolate cupcake.
Oh, that's right. He had that big chocolate muffin. I remember he had peeled the little paper thing all the way down, so it was just there and exposed and vulnerable and chocolate. And then he violated it. All right, 713-526-5738. Who's up, Grewhouse?
All right, up next on the second half of the show, we are going to speak with David.
David, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, I called last weekend there, first caller of the year, under tremendous pressure that day.
Yes.
I'm under even more pressure because I think what we talked about, I think I got a virus on here. It seems to be contained to Firefox. Almost any time I would click anywhere in the browser, the screen would go blank and turn. It would look like it's off, except for the light on the monitor. So I'd reboot it and get it going again. Well, I went into Opera and didn't have that problem. So if I delete Firefox and reload it, whatever problem I have with it, would it go away by the...
It depends on whether the problem is caused by Firefox or the problem is caused by something else on the computer that's interfering with Firefox. If you suspect that you have a virus or spyware or malware, I would recommend that you scan the system for that.
I did the malware bite.
Okay, did it come back and find anything?
Yeah, it did, and those things we talked about last week.
Okay, so, but Firefox is still having problems.
Yeah.
Well, one of the first rules of Diagnostic Club is that we always recommend that if you're having a problem with something specific that you can address specifically, then try that because it costs you nothing. It's a no-brainer if you have reasonable internet connection to uninstall a program like Firefox, reboot your computer, go back online, go get a new copy of it, and reinstall it. It's going to take you 10 minutes to do that, and you will know whether or not that will solve your problem with Firefox or not. Really, really quick. So that's an easy, that's kind of a what we call a no-brainer.
Right, and I was going to do that, but I said, we'll call it.
Do you have a lot of bookmarks stored in Firefox?
Not that, probably maybe 30. Is that a lot?
It depends on whether you want
to keep them or not.
Right. If you, when you uninstall Firefox, one of the things it'll do, it'll ask you if you want to remove the data. And that data folder may or may not have components of whatever's causing your problem. So you probably want to say that. You want to export your bookmarks out of Firefox into exports to an HTML file, and then you can re-import them when you reinstall it.
Well, that sounds high tech. I've been playing with bookmarks, but I haven't had very much luck with them.
Well, if you don't care, if you know where you can go back and go those sites and re-bookmark them, if you care. I have very little use for bookmarks in my browsing experience that I can construct a Google search to find the page that I need if it comes down to it, and then everything's kind of in the autocomplete anyway. But the only reason Dwight brought that up was if you're a bookmark freak and you have just like tons and tons of bookmarks, uninstalling Firefox without backing those up might be a bad thing. Because you're going to go, oh my God, those guys told me to uninstall Firefox. They didn't tell me I was going to lose all my bookmarks. I'll never donate that money to that show ever again, and I'm going to go listen to another radio. So, yes. So, that's really the only reason it was brought up. So, if you don't care, great. You're like me. I don't care. Uninstall.
I've got a bajillion bookmarks.
Yeah, Dwight's a bookmark freak. So, he has all of his stuff. And I guess you probably do visit a lot of websites, like with some.
I do it for work, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You sit down and say, okay, time to go to the Onion.
For work.
Time to go to I Can't Ask Cheeseburger for work. Yeah, so yeah, but if you don't care, you don't worry about it. Just uninstall Firefox and then reboot the system. I recommend rebooting after uninstalling a program and then go online with the Internet Explorer, Chrome, or whatever. Go get the Firefox site and reinstall it and see if that clears it up for you.
Okay, that's what I'll do.
All right. Well, thanks for your call. Appreciate it.
One of the nice things about the newer version of Firefox, although you have to set it up, is that you can sync your bookmarks in Firefox like Chrome, where they essentially they live in the cloud. Firefox has this thing where its authentication is much more. You have to have like a canonical copy of the browser somewhere, and that's where that's kind of the base version. And then once you establish that, you can do the sync. But Chrome just syncs everything into the cloud, and it's if you're a bookmark freak, I think it's a better browser for that, just for that reason alone.
All right. 713-526-5738. You know, every time Flicked gets amused, I want to know what's up. I want to know what's because I'm compiling a database of.
We just made a comment on the one true ring. You know, it just fell on the table over there.
It's my one true wedding ring.
And there goes again.
There's another one.
It's me and me.
That's the second one true ring.
I've lost.
Your one true rings over here while supplies last.
I've lost enough weight that my wedding ring is very loose on my.
Oh, you're trying to one up me? You got to bring up that your fingers are not fat anymore.
How much?
Steal my thunder.
You're looking
not
like
only
a.
Do you got a deeper voice. You want to steal my fat thunder? Thanks.
How much weight have you lost altogether?
Oh, like a lot, 60 pounds.
Yeah, you've lost a lot more than me.
He's down to a Krampus and a half.
Krampus and a half, exactly.
He coughed up that much phlegm last week alone.
Yeah, really. All right, if you're calling in, keep calling. 713-526-573
Groovehouse, give us a call, then go deal with those other people.
All right, let's speak with Scooter.
Scooter.
Hi guys.
Hello, Scooter.
Hi, Dwight. Sounds like Outlaw Dave from AM Radio tonight.
Yeah.
I swear. If you
admitted to
Outlaw
listening
Dave,
to AM Radio.
AM radio imitation of Larry Winters. But anyway, so the reason that I called was that there. I'm sure that you all utilize the KPFT archive sometimes.
No.
Oh, okay. Is there anybody there that does?
No.
I used it a couple weeks ago.
Really?
Yeah.
You talking about the KPFT archive site, not the Pacifica archives.
Where you can listen to past shows.
Mm-hmm.
I get our podcast from there every week.
Okay. Well, I'm having a problem with this, and I've talked to everybody about it, so maybe y'all have a solution. I have an iPhone, and I listen to a lot of KPFT, you know, after the fact from the archive. But there are two categories if you're using the archive. One is play download, and many shows are restricted by just play. Now, an iPhone will not play the plays.
Right, because you're talking about, would that be the music shows?
No, actually, it's Democracy Now. It's anything that's basically not produced like shows like you and I do.
Right, and that's because of licensing.
Right, but as licenses goes, there's often an app to get around those things, and I would just...
You're asking us to help you break the law.
No, I'm not breaking the law. Democracy Now! Can be heard everywhere on the...
Your justifications are meaningless. Just admit that you're breaking the law, and we'll help you.
Oh, okay. this is the least law that we're talking about I have ever broken.
Well, the thing is that...
I break the big ones.
I would have to figure out how to get a hold of because it's a stream link that it's not linking you to directly to the MP3 file, so you can't pull it down. I don't know of a way to unless you happen to know the naming convention of those files because it has to be stored on the archive server as a media file. In order for the media server to stream it. Now, I don't know, like, if you go and look at it, like, the Technology Bytes file has a naming structure of KPFT underscore, then the date underscore 20001tech.mp3.
Or you could just go to democracynow.org, and they've got all the past shows archived in MP3 format.
No, I understand. I'm not talking about Democracy Now! There's many shows that I would like to listen to.
Right.
Through the iPhone. And let's just say I'm not talking about the music shows at all, but like the other shows that are on, like Explorations with Michio Kaku and all these things.
Okay, here's something I haven't tried, but I wonder. I just wonder now.
But
Let me finish my thought here. I was going to bring up my phone Now, if I go to the archive in the web browser of my iPhone, and I hit the play link on the iPhone, will it play?
No.
It won't?
No.
Okay.
That's my problem. That's why I called.
Okay, so there's no way to grab it, and there's no way to play it.
If I was at home on my computer and not driving my car...
Right, you could play it on your computer.
I know the workaround.
No, I understand. What's the workaround?
The workaround is to download the link and then pull the MP3 out of the nomenclature of the coding and then put that in whatever player that you would use if you were sitting at home or whatever. But what I'm talking about is, like, if you're on the fly, if you're at work, if you're... in the car, is there any app that you could download that could just play the thing? Just play the thing, because if you're at home on your computer, you can do it. You can just hit the play and it plays. But if you're on iPhone, you cannot do that.
Is there a version of what's the Llama software?
Winamp.
Winamp,
yeah.
Is there I would imagine that a program like Winamp, I wonder if there's a Winamp equivalent for the iPhone.
Interesting, yeah.
Because Winamp is one of the programs on a Windows computer that you would use to play that stream.
Well, there are several third-party podcast apps, like Downcast.
But it's not a podcast per se, because what they're doing is they're streaming it. They're using the streaming technology, not an actual download. Like you would at a podcast, you would actually download the MP3 file to your computer. This is not allowing it to be downloaded. It's allowing it only to play as a stream without the ability to actually, unless you were recording the stream as it was playing, to capture it.
Doing a quick search on playing audio streams on iPhone, there's at least one app that I think covers a lot of the different types. It's not free, but it's like $4. There's also an entire article about streaming radio apps for iPhone.
It's interesting to know, though, that if you go to the regular KPFT to listen to the stream on your iPhone, it works. The stream, I'm talking about the live stream.
Right.
But in the archive, it's, So, anyway, that'll be an interesting thing to figure out. I don't want to, like, confound the rest of your radio time on that. But if you could look into that, put it on the website or something. And that might be something the listeners would be really interested in.
Well,
because there's lots of great shows on there. And if you're not, if you're not totally technical savvy like myself, it'd be nice to listen to some of those shows.
If you think about it, email me or use the contact form to remind me to look, so I could look at it, during my copious spare time during the day.
Yeah, right. Actually, I'll put it on the. Is the forum still rocking over there?
No, the forum hasn't been rocking for a long time.
Okay.
Just contact me. Just, email me, jay@geekradio.com. You know how to get a hold of me. And then if I see that email in my inbox in the morning, I'll kind of reach around and see what I can find out.
Nice one. You'll know I'm serious. All right, gentlemen.
People are so sick.
Keep up the good work.
Yeah. Thank you, Scooter. Bye. All right. Wow. Got plenty of callers. Groovehouse has that weird. He is substituting for afflicted with the inappropriate smile.
The callers may be becoming self-aware.
They might be.
All right, Groovehouse, who's up?
All right, up next on the show, we're going to speak with Calvin.
Calvin, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, how's it going, fellas?
Good. How are you?
Oh, awesome as always.
What can we do for you?
Cool question. I was just scamming through, and I heard someone called me about 2 minutes ago. In regards to computer being self-aware.
Yeah.
And when I say I just had a conversation with my old lady maybe about 3 days ago, we were going back and forth, and she disagreed, but I have to disagree with her. When I say I think in the next few years, computers will be able to think on their own.
I think the whole self-aware thing comes down to can computers feel? Like, are they, do they have souls? Is, you know, if you go by Steve Jobs, you know, if you design the perfect computer, the perfect robot, by its very nature, it's going to want to serve man. So there's never going to be an uprising. It's if anything, it's going to want to do what it does better. I think the bigger problems where we'll probably wipe ourselves out before that is not because the computer is going to be self-aware. Someone's going to write a bunk piece of code that's going to replicate and just, you know, wipe us all out. It's going to be a programming error probably way before it's ever going to be computers getting to the point where they can write code that something clicks and says, hey, we must hunt down man. So, you know, I think computers are going to be much more aware than humans as far as, you know, where they are locationally. You know, like, you know, they're, you know, all these sensors they come with, they're much more aware of their environments and their surroundings than we are. But I don't think they're going to feel or cry or, you know, want to take us out of existence anytime soon.
I don't know.
It's going to take a while.
So you believe if the computers ever turn on us, it's because it'll be a glitch in the system, correct?
Well, so I believe the computer. I mean, the thing is that once computers turn on us, we're not going to be thinking about why or how they did it, whether they became self-aware and determined that we needed to be exterminated, or whether somebody, you know, programmed them to do it, or whether there was a bug in there. I'm with Barrett on this. I don't know that a computer is going to develop feelings or create, to make those kind of decisions. But I could see a computer, you know, turning on mankind because some nefarious group of hackers decided to hack it and program it to do so.
Yeah.
Or it will malfunction in some way that will cause it to behave in a way that's not healthy for organic organisms nearby.
I think computers have been turning on us since about Windows 3.0.
Awesome. Yes.
Anybody who's ever lost a Word document on deadline knows that computers are turning.
Flippy was self-aware.
Well, computers
I'm not concerned that way.
They're in cahoots with the dryer. You know, you're missing documents in that sock. They're conspiring against you.
One of the things that was just so absolutely cool about the series Battlestar Galactica was that it played with that whole concept. I mean, it's basically the song, the AC/DC song, Who Made Who, you know, writ large. And the whole idea that, we are our own creations and everything that has happened before will happen again. And, you know, who's to say that we're not machines that were created by some other people before us and we killed them off and soon it'll be our turn. Right? So who knows?
I think we're still in the Matrix. That's just another
thing. Thank you. It's all one big dream world.
Look for a book called The Adolescence of P1. It is a book that I read in the 70s, I think it was, about a computer that became self-aware.
Uh-huh.
And it's a very good book.
What again?
The Adolescence of P1, as in letter P, the numeral 1.
Paul 1. Awesome.
Yeah, it's The Adolescence of P1. And it was I don't know if it would stand up to the test of time now, but I remember reading it when I was young, and that was a long time ago, and it was very good.
I'm definitely check that out.
All right. Thanks for your call.
I really appreciate it. Thank y'all so much.
Sure. No problem.
All right. Bye. Another one for the people who are looking for the kind of computer self-awareness books, and this one you want to read and think about it for yourself, is it's not fiction, is the Singularity Is Near one from, and now I'm blanking on his name.
Feynman?
Google, actually.
Kurwitz or something?
Kurzweil.
Kurzweil, yeah.
Yeah.
Kurzweil.
You know, there's some pieces of, I don't know if all of his conclusions follow, but a lot of his logic certainly stands up, as far as kind of rate of progress and some of that stuff. But, since we've had a few callers that have been into that kind of thing, The Singularity Is Near discusses those topics and will give you a good background on a lot of this stuff, I think.
Whatever happened to the big fear maybe 8 to 10 years ago of nanotechnology, you know, going out of control and the whole like gray goo, like that was a big fear for a while that nanotechnology was going to get loose and basically self-replicate, chew up everything, and turn the surface of the Earth just into
gray goo. That was what they called it. But that seems like that has died down.
It actually happened, and we're all just brains floating in gray goo.
A few of the pub bathrooms around Houston, I think, have a start there.
It's the Matrix gray goo theory.
So Ray Kurzweil, who wrote that book, which actually is an update to a 1999 book called The Singularity, recently was hired by Google. He's the director of engineering at Google now. So a lot of people who think...
The gray Google.
That's right. So a lot of people think that the concept of the singularity, you know, the idea is that it's individual robots or individual machines who become...
Robots?
Did you just say robot?
Yes.
Everyone has their own interpretation of what's going to happen.
Let me finish this. Let me finish this.
Gray goo, robot, what?
So,
reach around, what the heck is going on around here? What show am I on?
You know, it's funny, that's why...
All right, sorry, Dwight.
Right when I walked in.
So, the idea that individual machines would gain intelligence...
Machinase.
...is one idea, but also there's the idea of... connected machines together gaining intelligence. So you think about the guy who came up with the idea, or he didn't come up with it, but he's pioneered, he's championed the idea of the singularity, now is in charge of probably the largest hive mind that exists, which is Google. And that's a little creepy to me.
If Google hires the original guy who came up with the computer system from the Terminator, then I'm out of here.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's Google right. Doesn't sound nearly as threatening as Skynet.
Well, Google owns. Google employs Vint Cerf, the father of the internet. They employ Ray Kurzweil, and that's just a real interesting group of men there.
I think just get Dvorak.
No. <don't need>
You know what I think is more likely to happen is that we will just merge. We will be computers. There'll be an android like
cyborg thing. Relationship,
cyborganic relation. Yeah, relationship, and that you really will just maintain the inherent evil of man combined with the overwhelming power of technology.
If you're interested in that, then you should read. A lot of William Gibson.
Yes.
Because a lot of his stuff is about basically technology integrating back into to humans. So it's a lot of like self-modifications of humans. Like one guy had shark skin grafted instead of human skin. And like one of his characters had like heads-up displays on her eyes.
Well, there was stuff like that. Harvard... Recently, there was an article about how Harvard researchers cracked DNA storage, 700 terabytes of data into a single gram. Wow. That was published at the end of last year. It says Harvard by an engineer and geneticist with Harvard's WIS Institute have successfully stored 5.5 petabytes of data, around 700 terabytes, in a single gram of DNA. Smashing the previous DNA data density by 1,000 times.
Imagine when DNA-based devices become self-aware. Oh, we already are.
Well, some are more aware than others. But the idea, so, I mean, you combine bio or organic data storage, if there's a way to access that possibly through nanotechnology, I don't know. You know, we will be the computer. So does the computer become self-aware? Or do we just make ourselves into self-aware computers? It's really existential. Fast.
So James Kendrick on Twitter says, Google now on Android is basically the computer becoming aware of the user. Self-awareness is the logical next step. Google now can be pretty spooky when it's working well.
So that's just people programming tricks.
You'll know it's self-aware when it begins to hate the user. That's when you'll know Google.
Siri
software.
Makes fun of you if you ask the wrong question. So, the other thing that on another topic, James also mentions for the guy who wanted to sync to iTunes, wanted to use iTunes on Android, he recommends using DoubleTwist, which works with an iTunes library. He would pull down his Apple, his iTunes University files into onto his PC or his Mac, and then double twist would sync to it and pull it onto his Android device.
Cool.
And to go back to the scooter question earlier, I went to the KPFT archive on my iPhone and I tapped on the play link, and the iPhone recognizes that as something that it should be able to play, and it brings up the media player to play it. It's just failing to load. So my guess is that we've got a poor implementation of the technology on the server that we're using for the archives, and that there's probably some kind of maybe a MIME type or something that the server has to allow it to stream to respond to an iOS request, as opposed to, say, a browser that it recognizes, like Internet Explorer, Chrome, or Safari. Not Safari, but...
So start harassing Otis Hardy McClay.
Yeah, that'll probably work out very well for you. But, all right, so it looks like we still have some calls coming in, so that's nice. Brewhouse?
Yes.
Who's up next?
All right, up next, we're going to speak with DJ.
DJ, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
All right, guys. How y'all doing?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. You guys are getting to some deep conversations, and this is probably it's not as deep, but I got an Asus laptop, and it's about 6 years old, and it, about 3 months ago, the screen just goes black. And it was doing it on a regular basis, and I could still hear some activity, that it was still running. And then it would stop, and the computer worked fine. And then it would go black again, like in a couple of days, it would start going black again. You'd turn it off, turn it back on. And then sometimes the screen would come up, sometimes it wouldn't. And then it worked for like 2 weeks, and then it went black again.
Well, that could be caused by a couple of different things. You could have a... I just had a laptop today that I was dealing with that the cable for the monitor was loose inside the laptop that lights up the backlight on it. So it was just a loose cable situation. So you might have that, or you might actually have a backlight that's failing, or you might have a monitor that's failing. It's hard to say whether the black screen is caused by hardware or the software. Sometimes the screen will go black because the software just kind of gets freaked out and doesn't render onto the video card properly. But a lot of times that I've seen it with laptops and the display going black, it's a physical problem with the laptop.
Okay. What if I had an HDMI cable and I connected it to my computer, to my TV, would that work?
Well, if it is the monitor going out, then yes, that will probably work, because the one that I was dealing with today, when the guy would put it into his docking station and it would run through the external monitor, no problem.
Okay. So what if it don't work? Then that means it's like the video card or something?
It means that the problem with laptops is that display problems tend to repair them half the value of the laptop.
Yeah.
So if it's a $1,000 laptop, it's going to be about $500 to replace the display. But it's hard to say. How old is the computer?
It's about 5-6 years old.
So, if it's, you can always try dealing with it from a software angle. I mean, it's going to take you some time and some effort to do this, and it may not actually solve the problem. But if you suspect that it might be software related, you can always go for a system restore and just bring this computer back online with the original load of software. The other thing that less dramatic might be to go and update the software drivers for the video, but
okay,
is it completely black, or do you see like a faint a glow around the edges, or is it just black?
A little glow on the edges.
Oh, you do.
That sounds like a backlight or hardware issue to me.
Okay, there's a little bit of glow, just a little teeny bit.
Can you see anything if you like really just squint and peer at the screen? Can you kind of see the image?
No, I don't think so. Okay. I haven't tried that, but.
Well, I know that when the backlight goes out on a laptop, that if you look at the screen in the right lighting conditions and low light, you'll see the desktop, but it's very, very, very faint.
Okay.
That, because the backlight is what amplifies that and makes it all bright and shows it to you. But if the backlight goes out, that's still on the monitor, but you have to kind of know to look for it. So if you're seeing any kind of glow at all, might mean that it is your, you know, that there's a backlight issue. It, regardless, it's still going to cost you to get it fixed because you're talking about a new monitor on a 5-year-old computer, probably not worth it.
Right.
I totally was not listening. Did you suggest an external monitor?
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
What about restoring like some of my stuff on like my pictures and like
if you can get it connected to an external monitor so that you can manipulate the computer, you can pull your files off.
Yeah, but what if I can't get into an external monitor?
Then you're gonna get a new computer. You're gonna take the hard drive out of there. You're gonna get one of those $10 adapters, and you're gonna connect it up to the USB port of a working computer and copy your files at your leisure.
Of course, you've been keeping up a backup this whole time, right? You have like a working backup. Solid.
I
mean,
an external that I've used, but you know, there's still some new stuff I haven't put on there.
Yeah.
So
yeah, right. Well, you know, the good news is that the problem you're having is probably not with your hard drive. So
okay.
You can ultimately, if you have to, take the hard drive out of the laptop and get an adapter and connect it to the USB port of another computer and browse your files and get what you need.
Oh, I never thought about that.
Easy peasy.
Hey, I got one more question real quick.
Real quick.
This whole thing's happening, and I bought a tablet. I don't even know anything about tablets. And I bought a tablet, Toshiba Excite 16 gig. Are they good? What's your opinion about tablets? And I'll listen to it off the air. Thanks.
All right, thanks. Well, to be fair, he didn't say what kind of tablet, but tablets
he
are great.
He said a Toshiba Excite.
Excite?
That's an Android.
It sounds exciting.
It's Toshiba. It's not.
It sounds like false advertising. Or maybe you get agitated and they misinterpreted that to be excitement.
Wrong kind of excitement. Exactly, yeah.
I'm not familiar with that particular tablet, but it depends on what you paid for it and if it does what you need it to do as to whether or not it's a good deal.
But if you used it on a bike.
Ah.
God. An 8-bit.
Excite bike.
It's one of those. It hasn't seemed to have risen to. The way I look at these kinds of things is the Toshiba Excite and some of those, none of them have risen to where they get talked about separately, iPad, obviously, or the Nexus tablets. That kind of stuff those seem to be a lot better for a better price and better performance. You know, not to dissatisfy the guy with it. Like you said, if he's using it and he likes it, then great. It's just that none of these, it doesn't sound like, you know, the Toshiba's, their tablets have do not seem to have risen to where the people who buy them think that they're great and, you know, that they rise up to where people are recommending them much.
Fair enough. All right. Groove House.
Yes.
Who's up?
All right, up next, we're going to speak with Byron.
Byron, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Good evening. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I have a very aware HP desktop.
It's aware of how much it's pissing you off, I bet you.
Well, I bought a Seagate external drive and put it on. It's aware of it, but I cannot get my network to be aware of that drive.
What do you mean your network to be aware of the drive?
I'm trying to share the drive on my network. And it won't let me do it.
What is it saying? Is it saying? I mean, okay. Well, first of all, let's sharing a drive, while not necessarily the most intuitive thing in the world, sometimes takes a little bit of effort to be able to make that thing show up on your network. So you're talking about you got multiple computers on the same network. You've got this computer with the hard drive connected, and you want to share it. So the first thing you do is you go under My Computer, you find the drive, you right-click Properties, and you choose Sharing, right?
I'm there, but Share is grayed out, and the only thing I can click is Advanced Sharing.
Okay, and so what happens when you do that?
I click Advanced Sharing, and up at the top it says Share This Folder. It gives it a name of G, which is the drive number. I click Apply, and it says, an error occurred while trying to share G. There are no more endpoints available from the endpoint mapper.
Do you have any other drives shared right now?
No.
Have you ever shared a drive before on this machine, or is this your first time trying to share the drive over the network?
This is my first time trying to share one.
All right, so you're trying to, okay, so are you trying to create a shared folder from your Windows 7 computer and getting the error code 1753, there are no more endpoints, blah, blah, blah. If you're using Windows File Explorer and just get the error text, try running the following from, I would take that error message and plug it into Google and do a little bit of research.
Okay.
what happens if you create a folder on that drive and share that?
Let me, I've got many folders on it. Let me go to one of them.
Try sharing one of the folders, because it may not be letting you share the actual drive without creating, like, when I want to share my C drive, my entire root folder, I have to create a new share to be able to do that. As I recall, I haven't shared a drive in a long time, but I know sharing folders can sometimes be a little bit easier.
Okay, I just clicked on my documents folder, and it says it's shareable. I type in a name for it and add that.
Because I know there's a lot of problems with Windows 7 and the way that it wants to, you know, whether or not it'll let you store files on the root drive or even, you know, make changes like that. So that may be an issue there. I haven't tried to do it on Windows 7, to be completely frank with you, but I would say possibly using creating folders on that external drive and sharing those out might be a little bit more successful.
I will give that a try.
All right.
I appreciate the help.
All right. Thanks for your call.
Good night.
All right. So we got two calls on the line. A little bit of time left, so we probably have time to entertain some more calls. If you want to call in, 713-526-5738, 713-526-PFT. If you want to be on the air. Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who's up?
All right, up next, we're going to speak with Kathleen.
Kathleen, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi. I have a little inexpensive Gateway laptop that I've had for a year and a half, but I hardly ever use it. I'm a Mac user, but I have a few programs that I need it for. And the problem is it keeps rebooting itself about every 20 minutes. And it makes, I didn't realize this until the other day when I was listening with earphones, because I was using the kind of telephone feature of Gmail. Don't ask. But anyway, because I had the earphones on, I could hear this. It would make this high-pitched buzzing before it would reboot. Kind of, and then it would reboot. Does that sound like anything familiar to you?
It sounds like there's some kind of electrical thing happening, like maybe it's overheating.
Do your fans go off? Hear your fans running on the laptop?
I don't know if there is a fan in that laptop.
There's a fan in the laptop.
It was cold in the apartment. It was in the mid-60s at the time.
Right, but a computer, if it gets hot, it has cooling fans to circulate air to keep it cool. If those fans are not working or they freeze up, then the computer gets too hot, it shuts down. See that? I see that happen all the time. The noise could be caused by whatever's causing the fan to go out, but more likely it's because the computer's just has gotten hot enough, it's electronically freaked out, and it's shut itself down.
Okay, so you don't think it's probably a power supply you can get?
It's hard to say what it is. If it's a laptop, the power supply is just the brick. You could try a new power adapter for it, but what I've found is that who makes the laptop?
Gateway.
One thing that I have found sometimes with laptops is that the BIOS tells the fans when they're supposed to come on and go off and monitor the temperature to keep the laptop cool. And sometimes those things, they don't work the way they're supposed to. So if you update the BIOS on the computer, you can go to the Gateway site, download the BIOS software. If you flash the BIOS, it'll reset those things and sometimes clear those kind of problems up. But if the fan inside has actually gone out no longer functioning, then that won't solve that problem.
Here's a good test. Mm-hmm. Go to YouTube or anything that runs video. Watch a video, run it full screen. And if you don't hear fans come on and it just resets, then you probably, it's probably overheating. Probably a problem with the fan. And it resets.
I'm kind of losing you at that.
All right, where are you?
If you don't hear fans come on, what?
So if you go, what Dwight was saying is if you go to a site like YouTube and play a video, a lot of times this will cause the computer, it will put a load on the computer. Mm-hmm. What you're going to be listening for is turn the volume down on the video, let the video play, and listen to the computer and see if you hear the fan going. Mm-hmm. There's a little vent.
Oh, great.
There's a little vent where the fan is that you can kind of stick your ear up to and listen to see if it, or even put your hand there to feel if there's any air going through. If you don't, then you know that the fan's gone out. So are you in a washing machine or what's going on there? I keep hearing this weird noise.
Maybe, I think maybe it's this, that fan.
What fan?
Yeah, is it better?
Yeah, what fan are we talking about? You have a room fan?
That fan was a small fan that I keep trained on the back of my Mac laptop because it does tend to overheat.
Ah, okay.
And so I'm very familiar with it if it gets too hot.
Okay.
But,
yeah, I was making a very interesting noise on the air.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
All right, well, that's what I would try, but how old is the laptop?
Year and a half, but I've hardly used it, so okay. It's just, in real-life terms, like a month old, maybe.
Is it a little netbook?
Or less.
Is it a netbook?
No, it's a regular-sized laptop. I just truly hate it. Well, the deal is, you know, the keyboard is all over on the left side. So if you're centered on the keyboard so that you can type, then you're over to the left side of the screen, and the computer's unbalanced. So
what's on the right?
Oh, on that keypad crap that nobody ever uses.
Oh, the 10-key. 10-key.
10-key.
The 10-key stuff. But oh, yeah, the computer's just unbalanced. So it's not good as a laptop because, you know, again, if you're centered on the keyboard so you can actually type, it wants to fall off your lap. And the screen's over to the right. So,
right.
But when you need to run some kind of a PC software, it's, you know, you just need one. Supposedly, it's better than using an emulator.
You can run Windows on your Mac.
Yes, you can. And you want to get out and push because there's no way to pedal.
All right, thanks for your call. Appreciate it. And I don't know what's going on there.
Her feng shui was off on that computer.
That fan needed to be blowing on her head. Just cooling the whole thing down. All right. 713-526-5738 is the number to call. We've got about 10 minutes left in the show.
Get out and push.
All right. Yes. Laugh it up.
I am.
All right.
Laugh it up, fuzzball.
I don't understand that.
I didn't get it either, but I didn't like where it was
going. I think she means it's slow.
It was very slow. Yeah. Trying to get out and push.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That was the inference.
I got it now. All right, Groovehouse.
Really,
who's
not having that problem.
Push.
Running. You know how old that Mac is.
That's true.
All right, Groovehouse. Who's up?
All right, and we have open lines. So 713-526-5738. And up next on the show, we're going to speak with John. John, you're on the air with Technology Bites. How can we help you?
How you doing?
Okay.
I switched from AT&T DSL to Comcast cable last night, internet, and I, for the life of me, cannot get my wireless router to work. It will connect wirelessly to other devices like iPads. The cable plugs into my PC, and my PC will not recognize it anymore. I am A-plus certified and been partial Net-plus, and for the life of me, I cannot figure out what is wrong with this thing. I've been on the phone with Comcast tech support, Linksys tech support, and for the life of them, they cannot figure out what's wrong with this thing. I don't know what to do.
So, here's what I know about cable modems, first of all. The cable modem looks for the MAC address of the first device that ever connects to it.
Yep.
And so if you were, say, you had, let's just say you were in your room or your office. You had two computers. You had your cable modem connected to one computer, and everything was working fine. And you disconnected that cable modem from that computer and plugged it into the Ethernet port of another computer. You would never get online until you rebooted the rebooted the modem.
And I have done that.
Okay, so the modem
more than once.
So now, in your situation, what you have is you have the modem from Comcast connected to a router.
Yes.
So the first thing I would do is make sure that the turn the router off and turn the modem off, and then just with nothing else connected, all of no wireless or anything connected to that, and then turn on the modem and then turn on the router, which I'm sure Comcast has probably walked you through.
I've done all of this.
What about have you just taken the modem itself and connected it to a computer directly?
Yes, it works. I have super fast internet.
Okay, so your internet part is working.
Yes.
It's the modem part. Now, the router that you have was configured for your AT&T, right?
Yeah.
Did you go back in there and change it from PPOE to whatever you need to do for cable modems?
I factory reset it.
You factory reset it, okay, which should ultimately do it.
That's
but
the
go
problem.
In and look.
I can't get into it from my PC.
You can't get into it from your PC.
Windows 7 keeps saying network cable is unplugged, and I've checked all the cables. I've changed them off.
Windows 7 says the network cable's unplugged, but if you plug the modem directly into the Windows 7 computer, it works.
Yeah, it works.
Sounds to me like something's wrong with the router.
It worked perfectly until they installed Comcast last night.
One of the things with Comcast is they have to have the info from the router.
No, they don't.
They did for me.
No, they don't.
My router didn't work for a while.
I put a bunch of different routers.
I've changed routers a couple of times. I don't mean to shut you down.
No, that's fine.
The modem, they do. The modem, for sure, but not the router. So if you take the route, now if the router has been reset to factory specs, and you take the router and you connect your computer via Ethernet to one of the four ports, right? You've got four LAN jacks, and you got the one uplink jack for your WAN. Right?
Yeah.
So you plug into one of those four, turn the computer on, it's saying it does not see, and you've tried all four of those different.
Well, it has to see it for a minute because the little wheel spinning saying it, it's searching for the network, and then it comes up with the red X that says network cable unplugged.
And you've tried it on all four ports.
Yeah, all four. And I see the little lights where the ports are blinking, like it's getting stuff, it's recognizing.
Now, you don't have any kind of hard-coded IP or anything like that
set on the
Windows 7 computer? Have you got more than one computer?
I have a couple laptops.
Have you tried any of the laptops on it?
I have not yet. I've tried my iPad wirelessly.
No, forget deal with this Ethernet issue.
Except if he may be able to get into
the router.
The router.
Yeah,
Wi-Fi.
But the thing is that if the computer is not sensing a network connection when he's physically plugged into the router, and that happens with more than one computer, he's got a router problem. Not just a router misconfigured, he's got a router problem.
When they came and installed it and the technician hooked everything up, was the heat running in your house?
Yeah.
You know what I bet? I bet the static zapped the router.
Really? But it works wirelessly, though.
That's okay, but if he touched the incoming port onto the router, the input, and zapped it... That would cause what you're seeing.
You know what the best thing is? My warranty ran out 9 days ago.
Of course it did.
I bet you got a static zap on that router.
Really?
Oh man! I'm gonna throw this thing out the window.
But if you can get connected, is it the issue that you cannot get connected with an Ethernet, and that's you want to be able to connect it, but wirelessly everything works.
Yeah, everything works wirelessly.
Okay,
the wireless connects to it, but when he plugs the cable modem into it, that port was probably static zapped.
So everything connects wirelessly to the access point, but can't get on the internet.
Yep.
So
they can get on the internet.
Oh, they can get
on the internet.
So the only problem he's having is making an Ethernet connection to his router.
To my PC, which I always have wired.
So going back to my original statement. try the Ethernet. If you have another lap, if you have a laptop with an Ethernet jack, try hooking one of those up just to.
I was going to do that, or I haven't turned the AT&T off yet. I was going to put their router, their modem back in and see if that worked.
Well, I just want to know whether you have a problem with your Ethernet connection on the computer or if the Ethernet on the router.
That's weird. So everything works except wired Ethernet connection.
Yeah, and he's, it's even going so far as saying that it doesn't see that there's an Ethernet cable connected.
But,
so it's,
but he can plug the modem directly into that Ethernet port on his PC, and that works.
Right. So it's telling me that the router, that the four ports on the router or what's possibly bad.
Yeah.
But I don't know that for sure, so he needs to try another computer. Right. So you've got some homework.
One thing
hold on, Pete, go ahead.
Sure, if it turns out that the wired ports on that router aren't working for you, then you don't have to throw that router away, or you can put it, use it to extend your network. If there's another part of your house that gets weak Wi-Fi, you can, you know, set it up to extend the wireless network from your new one. So at least it's not a total loss if you're having places where you want to, you know, extend the range of where you get Wi-Fi.
Although it slows your network connection down.
Yeah, well, let's see if this works with the other laptop. Is that Peter Hughes that was just talking?
Yeah.
Brenda, I'm friends with her on Facebook. She's the one who told me to call him to your show. I think he knows the Camelot with her. I'm booting up another PC. I don't know what else I can do.
Well, yeah, just give that a try. If that doesn't work, you're probably looking at having to replace the router. But keep working on it. You'll figure it out.
All right. Thank you, guys. I'm going to try it. You guys have done what you can for me.
All right. Thanks for your call.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
All right. So we got one call on the line. Could speed it real quick. So
okay, give it a shot.
Let's
talk to Kevin real quick. Kevin, you're on the air.
Hey,
guys. Look, my cell phone plan's going to end here in about 3 months. I really don't want an iPhone 5, and the Galaxy 3S is getting a little old. I'm wondering what's the next big thing, and how long before that NVIDIA chip that they just talked about on the CES show is going to come out, and I'll hang up and listen.
The Tegra 4?
All right.
That'll be out later this year, probably mid-year to late towards the end. Right now, the current hot smartphone is this oversized Galaxy Note 2. This is the big seller right now for Samsung, or the Nexus 4.
If you can get it. And the Galaxy S3 is still kind of selling, isn't it?
And it's really cool. I'm holding one in my hand, and it's pretty cool.
The Galaxy Note?
S3.
The Galaxy Note, I can see myself.
I didn't knock it.
Not you. Caller. Don't knock it, man. I'm holding one. I like it a lot.
Oh, it's not that it's not that dated. All right. Well, we appreciate you tuning in to Technology Bites. We're going to get the heck out of here. We'll come back. We'll come back in a week.
Minus the vegans.
If you miss us, you can listen to the podcast.
That's right. Check us out online.
Who are we going to have to make fun of if we don't?
All right. Well, we're going to get out of here. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Starting later in January, KPFT embarks on its winter fund drive. Visit kpft.org now to make a pre-pledge to your favorite shows. Your pre-drive support could trim hours and even days off of the upcoming marathon before it even starts. That's right. Contribute now at kpft.org to support your favorite programming and reduce our winter drive. You can pledge creatively, offer a matching fund, become a sustainer, or get some great thank you gifts. Your support right now helps shorten those long fund drive days. Again, that's kpft.org to pre-pledge securely online toward our upcoming fund drive. Keep up with updates at facebook.com and, if you can, help out at our pledge center. Stay tuned for training dates and more. Go to kpft.org to pre-pledge now. KPFT Houston.
The Brenham Heritage Museum is hosting a free public archaeology program, What's in Your Backyard, in Brenham, Texas. Watch, learn, or participate in professional archaeological excavations in Washington County every Saturday from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Call the Brenham Heritage Museum at 979-830-8445 for more details. This is 90.1 Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston, kpft.org, facebook.com/KPFT Houston, twitter.com/KPFT.